For the Medical Journal of Australia, I'm Kate Swanell. At the request of the Royal Commission into Aged Care Quality and Safety, researchers from Flinders University have undertaken a review of international approaches to the provision of aged care. What they found, in summary, is that Australia has the highest proportion of older people living in institutional care compared with 11 other comparable OECD nations. We also spend much less of our GDP on long-term care for our older citizens. Dr. Suzanne Dyer is a senior research fellow at Flinders University and is a co-author of a perspective describing the results of the review. Associate Professor Craig Whitehead is a geriatrician and director of rehabilitation and aged care for the Southern Adelaide Local Health Network. Suzanne and Craig are my special guests today. You guys have asked a pretty big question here. Why is it a big question that needs answering? Why do we need to answer this question?
Well, we were actually asked to look at the way aged care systems are delivered and funded internationally by the Aged Care Royal Commission. And that's really important to give, you know, some examples and insights into how other countries are doing things around the world for the Commission, so to really give some insights into that.
How did you go about finding the data and what did you find in the end?
Basically, we had a long list of countries, 22 countries actually, that was agreed with the Commission and with expert advisors to look at internationally, and looking at, as I said, how they funded and ran their aged care systems. And
right.
These were selected based on comparability to Australia, but also to represent a broad range of how aged care systems could be delivered.
Okay.
And of these, there was about 13 countries, or there was 13 that had data reported to the OECD. So as part of this work,
yeah,
we did look at OECD data to be able to compare countries that had reported within that list that we had. And there are some limitations to using that kind of data, because the way different countries report and provide their data to the OECD can vary a bit in the way they define things. But nevertheless, it gives a really good broad insight into how Australia can compare internationally.
Tell me what you found and how we rate against other countries.
Two really key things that we think we found was, firstly, we looked at the proportion of people receiving long-term care, or the proportion of older people receiving long-term care in a number of different countries. And so for 12 countries that provided this data to the OECD, we looked at the proportion of people of different older ages that were receiving care and support. And we found that Australia, compared to 11 other countries, and these are European countries, Canada, the US, we ranked the highest as the proportion of people over 80 living in residential aged care. Now, that could be perceived as that we're providing a really high level of support. So we also approached the data in another way, where we looked at the total number of people receiving long-term care and what proportion was provided in residential care, so like nursing homes,
yes,
versus home care. And we still found that Australia was the highest in providing long-term care in residential settings. And the other key thing,
yeah,
was we looked at the proportion that was spent in terms of GDP,
mm-hmm,
on aged care or long-term care for older people. And in that, again, we had 12 countries that reported data. And for expenditure, or estimates of expenditure on long-term care, we found that Australia was ninth out of 12 countries in terms of our expenditure. So while comparisons are a little difficult, we certainly seem to be at very different ends of the spectrum in terms of providing residential care and our expenditure.
So in other words, we have a lot of people in long-term care, but we're not spending very much money to support them in that.
Well, a lot of people in residential care, I think we were fairly moderate in terms of providing long-term care, but, yeah, not spending a huge proportion. So some countries, for example, Sweden and Denmark, are spending more than 4% of their GDP,
yeah,
on long-term care for older people, and we estimated Australia was spending about 1.2%. And in terms of, yeah, long-term care, it seems that a lot of other countries are providing a lot more long-term care in the home or in the community,
yeah,
rather than in institutional care.
I think the other comment to make about expenditure is that Australia, like the United States, probably another, and maybe the UK also. I mean, in Australia, people put a lot of their own money into long-term care. I mean, it's the whole purpose of the RAD system where you put up a bond. So that cash sits with an aged care provider and is how, you know, that's part of the financing of aged care in Australia. So that wouldn't be counted. I mean, that is also a sort of individual spend money in Australia,
yes,
which they do in other aged care systems as well. But, you know, the really striking thing is that Australia has a system designed for people to be in aged care facilities, really. And there's all sorts of reasons why I think our system ends up looking like this. And I think the opportunity the Royal Commission has afforded is actually for Australia to take a little look and benchmark itself, even at this level, which, and there are provisos around it, all this sort of data, because there is, you know, particularly if you look at the area of something like rehabilitation or re-enablement, there is an overlap with health expenditure as opposed to aged care expenditure, and, you know, how that's counted may be different in different countries.
Craig, what do you make of these results? Does it encourage you? Does it discourage you? Do you feel it needs fixing?
I think that, like a lot of things, what you see is a system perfectly designed to give you the results you've got. On the one hand, we have a rhetoric that says older people, and in fact, older people will say this, they want to remain living at home as long as possible,
yes,
but we've designed a system that encourages them into care, which actually probably should be more expensive in the long term. And certainly, you know, therefore, even though we're underspending, we're also overspending on residential care facilities. And I think that is a real problem. I mean, in our practical day-to-day experiences, that I can find someone an aged care bed in about, on average, in hospital, in about 18 days, I think, is our current average.
Yeah.
But to get an equivalent high-level care vet package is a year. In fact, we tell people you're not going to get one because it's practically, you know, a year if you're needing, you know, 15 hours of care at home a week is essentially, you can't wait a year for that sort of care. So I think that's the problem. So we regularly will see people who say, I need more help. We say, yes, going to take you this long to get it, and they say, well, I'll go into care then. So it's not surprising the figures are the way they are.
Yeah.
I think the challenge is for government turns around, particularly in a very fiscally constrained environment. And the problem is there are also substantial winners and losers in this, in the sense that, you know, there are a lot of aged care providers who've invested a lot in bricks and mortar. Many aged care providers, you know, I mean, these assets need to be depreciated to zero. These assets are actually worth very little if we suddenly flip this on its head and start to provide more care in the community.
Yeah.
You know, because an aged care facility isn't much use for anything other than an aged care facility, other than land value.
Mm.
I think there's some real major fiscal financial risks for aged care providers if this situation is suddenly turned on its head. So, you know, it'll turn out to be one of these really wicked problems that probably governments, as have traditionally done, have shied away from. And that's part of the reason why we are where we are. I mean, it is going to have to spend more. But, you know, what the community wants is for it to be at home, not to be in institutions called an aged care home or a nursing home.
And there are some really good examples internationally about,
yeah,
how people are supported in the community. So Denmark's an example that we highlighted in the broader report that this article's about. And they've got a focus on trying to keep people at home. And their local, it's legislated that the local municipalities have to assess people applying for home care for their eligibility for a re-ablement, basically a rehab package. And for a certain amount of time, they'll go in and provide them with training and support to maximise their independence and capabilities before they determine the level of, you know, long-term care need to support them at home. And so there's a real emphasis on increasing their strength and fitness,
yeah,
and capabilities in their own home first, rather than just going in and providing help to dress.
And the Australian assessment system through the ACAT and the Regional Assessment Services, which is, you know, another topic in itself, I mean, it's built around principles of re-ablement, but the reality is the aged care services you can refer to don't get rewarded for re-ablement or re-enabling.
No, not at all.
And I think there is, without being too critical, there's an element of lip service to re-ablement in the Australian system. And there's also I think, a lack of understanding at the Commonwealth level about the complexities of rehabilitating frail older people. And, you know, certainly, I think one of the differences of Denmark, of course, is, and maybe, you know, most aged state-funded health services will have a degree of investment in rehabilitation, and that varies very widely between the states. And as a lot of things happens in state health systems, that's driven by individual clinicians who often push for things and get things over the line. And we even know in Adelaide there's broad differences in the access to rehabilitation between the different LHNs that exist in Adelaide, and you've multiplied that across the country. It's nowhere near systematic to say that you must be at your best before you get an aged care service. You must be optimised. There's a lot of, it's sort of written into the policy, but is very poorly enacted. And I mean, that, you know, if you make a logical argument is that if you've got a large elderly or older, frail population, you need to have them as fit as possible and as deteriorating as slowly as possible to minimise the long-term expenditure. Now, I guess I'm not sure when comparing Denmark to Australia whether some of the money that gets spent in rehabilitation is in the state versus the Commonwealth. I mean, that may be one of the differences about the money expenditure we're seeing. So I think, you know, that does make comparisons different, because then you've got the argument is rehabilitation for older people better serviced in an Australian context via the specialty services that exist funded by the states, or is it better serviced in a Commonwealth-funded aged care environment, which is generally constituted without a specialist focus? And you probably need both, but I think in an Australian funding, health and aged care funding, we really would struggle with this debate. You know, should it be the state, should it be the Commonwealth? And unfortunately, our Commonwealth-state divide, our older population sits right in the middle of that divide.
Does highlight the lack of integration of health and aged care in the
assessment. I think, you know, with the sort of Kevin Rudd, whatever it was, well, the National Health Reform, I remember went to something at the Hilton in Adelaide a few years, or I don't know how many years ago it was now, but when they were doing their round table. And I mean, you know, there was a lot of outcry from clinicians saying we need a joined up healthcare system between aged care, states, general practice, and none of the Commonwealth reform has really led to that. And I think that's a real challenge. I mean, New Zealand does have it all tied together, but there's sort of a fair number of people still in long-term care, though, don't they, in New Zealand, I think.
I'm chatting with Sue Dyer from Flinders University and Craig Whitehead, a geriatrician in Adelaide. Sue's co-authored perspective on Australia's reliance on residential aged care is available at mja.com.au. If you're enjoying this podcast, why not check out our other episodes at mja.com.au/podcasts. They're free to access and you can download them from the website. Back to our chat.
Are people with dementia a different case altogether? In this, I mean, rehabilitation services aren't going to do much for them in terms of their dementia. It's going to go where it's going to go.
I don't think we know the answer to that.
But there's certainly some programs we know that can help support people with dementia and their carers to manage and maximise their capabilities in the community much better, so, such as dyadic
program. I mean, there are actually already well-proven services that can improve the ability for carers and patients with dementia to care at home that have a therapeutic intent rather than just putting someone into shower. There's a program that's called the COPE program, or a dyadic intervention, which means a couples intervention. It is as effective, if not more effective, than the drugs that I prescribe. But COPE is not in any way subsidised by the government, whereas I can get a script for donepezil, you know, tomorrow, as long as you meet certain criteria. And I think this is one of the challenges, particularly in an Australian aged care, a health and aged care system, that access to effective person-based interventions, which are often allied health or nursing-driven, is really restricted, whereas access to a drug, I mean, is not. You know, there's lots of examples of that. Sleeping tablets to help you sleep versus cognitive behaviour therapy to help treat insomnia. You know, I can write a script for Serapax tomorrow, but I can't get a psychologist to go through the process with to improve their hygiene, which is as effective as a sleeping tablet. So I think, unfortunately, this is yet another example of how the disintegration between Commonwealth and state, primary care, hospital care, aged care, which is the hallmark of Australian governance, it is no surprise. Again, the system is perfectly designed to give us this outcome.
And not only give us this outcome, but keep us in this outcome.
Correct.
You know?
And, you know, you can understand why aged care is seen as a third-term priority for a Commonwealth government, because you've got to be pretty confident, or not too worried about you not caring whether you're going to get re-elected, I don't know, pretty confident to do it. And, you know, and of course, we haven't had a federal government that's lasted one term or two terms yet. So I think it's a real challenge for government. And I guess in a post-COVID world, will the Royal Commission and aged care have dropped down the agenda? Unfortunately, I think there's a very real likelihood it will have.
Yeah.
But keep the conversation going. I mean, I'm not saying we can have a world without residential aged care, because there will be a tipping point where, in fact, care at home is less effective than grouped care in an institution, or we even won't be safe. I mean, you know, if you take the argument to the extreme where, you know, you'd have a carer 24 hours a day for every person with dementia, well, I mean, we probably can't afford that. But there's clearly many steps beneath that, and that you can manage people safely, or even if there is an element of risk, because let's face it, residential aged care is not risk-free.
No.
There's an element of risk that's acceptable with actually many less hours of care than 6 hours a day at home. And I think the challenge for the health and aged care system is that people often come to me as an expert in ageing and the care of older people, asking for advice about, you know, and I can have that risk discussion, I can make those judgment calls, we do it on a daily basis. But of course, I have no way of accessing a care system that can support them. Conversely, if you go to an aged care provider, I mean, to be honest, their motivations are, you know, they're not necessarily, their whole appetite for risk will be different and how they do that. And, you know, the average care worker or even nurse or allied health practitioner who works in aged care is not going to have necessarily the expertise. I mean, without throwing the baby out in the bathwater, I think we do have some great strengths in the Australian aged care system. The idea of getting a professional assessment when you access an aged care service actually needs to be built on and made more robust. Thankfully, the Commonwealth Government abandoned the idea of tendering out the ACAT system to the private sector, something that none of us in the specialist arm of aged care felt really supported, nor did any professional body really. I think that's something that can be built on, about how to make these entry assessments better and give it a bit more teeth. Because I do know the ACAT assessors, I know many of them, an ACAT is part of the service that I manage. They are very passionate clinicians who actually know a lot about ageing and about how to advise people when they're at this crucial nexus. Yeah. What they're hamstrung by is, actually, I know what would help you, but you're going to have to wait a year. Mm. It's just insane. And look, it is possible to manage people at home safely, you know, with a combination of formal services, family, and an acceptance of what the risk is. In fairness, I think one of the other strengths of aged care, within certain limits, the idea of aged care packages is actually a really, and consumer-directed aged care packages are actually quite a good idea if they were available. I think we'd be having a different conversation about aged care if I could get a level 4 package with the same speed I could get a nursing home bed. It would be a very different world.
There's some other examples of ways other countries are managing to support people in the community as well by more strongly supporting the informal carers as well.
Correct.
So a lot of other countries have much more generous paid and unpaid leave provisions for carers.
Yep.
For older people, not just maternity leave.
Yes.
There's also models, you know, or approaches where there are direct cash payments which can be used to pay family members to provide care. Some countries, some Scandinavian countries, family carers can become registered with the local municipalities and actually receive salaries. So, you know, I think the thing is, there is always going to be a need for some residential care for some people, but other countries are obviously managing to get that balance a bit different. You know, we do need to look at all these different ways that other countries are managing to do that.
Suzanne, what do you hope the Royal Commission will make of your results?
I suppose we're really hoping that they get those key messages that, yes, we do need a greater investment in aged care. It needs to be a higher priority, clearly, in Australia. But also, we seem to be very focused and pivoted on institutional care. That home-based and community-based care really needs to become more of a centre of the aged care system, or a focus, as well as institutional care. It really doesn't seem to be given the same priority as a lot of other countries internationally.
I'm not sure. I mean, I absolutely agree with Suzanne. I think those are the key messages. And I think the Royal Commission has been very astute, I think, in the way it's gathered information. I've been quite impressed with a number of the questions they've asked. Having said all of that, I'm not sure, certain they're going to quite get that nexus between the state health systems, Commonwealth aged care, and that Commonwealth-state divide. I know that's been raised with them, but...
Yeah.
If you think about the direction they've come into this, they may not get that, but equally they may. And I know this has been raised with them, and I think that if there is a brave new world where actually there is appropriate investment and time put in this, and it's hopefully our Commonwealth-state relations will have improved in the COVID world, but then in fact you might get better cooperation between the states and the government because that hasn't necessarily marked this. And I think, you know, there's a whole lot of challenges there. There's differing investments in state-funded rehabilitation services that even within a city like Adelaide, whereas, you know, we might rehabilitate older person X in the south, but the same person with the same problem in a different part of Adelaide wouldn't get access to that same service. And I think that's one of the challenges. Fundamentally, you want people to have long-term care when they're at their best. Doesn't matter whether you're 18 or you're 118. It is, you know, obviously healthcare needs are different, but, you know, you want people to be optimising at their function optimised, and that requires appropriate and sometimes specialist medical assessment. It requires skilled allied health and nursing, and how we get older people to access that when we've got this split between the Commonwealth and state and GPs and hospitals, I think is actually, you know, if we can't solve these governance problems for health, then I think we're really going to struggle to get answers. I'm not sure the Royal Commission will get to the nub of that problem, because from my point as someone who works between Commonwealth and state all the time, you know, certainly as most geriatricians would recognise, this is the biggest problem. You know, it's a big problem for older people in Australia, yeah, that they're caught up in Commonwealth state divide. You could make the argument, if you want free flight of fancy, that in fact you would give all of health to the state.
But it is also noteworthy that most other nations do seem to have a much more decentralised aged care system than Australia. Strong federal control in Australia does seem to be unusual. Many countries, particularly Scandinavian countries, have much more local and regional control in delivery of the aged care system.
I mean, this is the dilemma, isn't it? We have to have better engagement between our Commonwealth and state elected officials to...
Thanks, Suzanne. Thanks, Craig. My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.